Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Monday, July 15th, 2013, and I'm your host, Leanne McAdoo. Tonight's top story, George Zimmerman was acquitted in the 2012 shooting death of Trayvon Martin. As promised, protests took place all over the country with thousands of people taken to the streets demanding justice for Trayvon. Oakland police stood down as protesters terrorized drivers. According to a report by ABC7, protesters had complete control of 14th and Broadway near Oakland City Hall and refused to let vehicles pass. At about 8:30 p.m., police opened the intersection to traffic, but it quickly deteriorated when demonstrators surrounded frightened drivers who found themselves trapped. The crowd forced them to turn around. Oakland police officers that had been near the corner retreated, leaving the helpless drivers without police protection. Now, this is all very similar to what happened during the LA riots in 1992 when police there were ordered by their superiors to stand down in order that they wouldn't escalate the cycle of violence that was going on there. But because there was no police presence, 53 people died and more than 2,000 were injured during the LA riots. But apparently police this weekend weren't given the stand down order there because they fired rubber bullets at protesters and arrested several others who blocked off the 10 freeway in LA. Now, when I first heard about the Justice for Trayvon protests and how they were backed financially by the Department of Justice, and then, of course, with the new Black Panthers calling for whitey riots, I thought, you know, they're going to let this play out and enact martial law, much like they did during the World Trade Organization riots in Seattle in 1999.
The WTO, since its inception, has come across incredible opposition worldwide because of its obvious authoritarian implications. That's a hard thing to deal with when you've got highly motivated people that have real complaints and valid issues. How do you deal with it? Well, you simply call in your friends. The left coast communists posing as anarchists under Delta Force direction.
Broke windows at the Gap. They're smashing windows at McDonald's. They're dumping over garbage cans. And they are very angry again and hostile. We're seeing more clashes with other protesters telling them to stop because they're giving everyone a bad name. None of the protesters, the legitimate protesters down here, want any of this kind of action. And they are very angry.
So right now, knocking the newspaper.
Megan, any sign yet of police trying to track them down?
There are no police anywhere. They're going. They're breaking the bank window here at U.S. Bank. We got to get out of here. We're going to run up the street because if they see us, they attack us. And so we're keeping a safe distance away from them.
Several police officers have told us because they were assigned to control the protest crowds, they weren't allowed to break ranks and to stop the black bloc. So the group just continued destroying property for nearly an hour.
What's wrong with this picture? If the police are supposedly there to protect the public and property, then why? Why did state police, Seattle police, as well as the feds, stand back and allow the anarchists in mass to run around and throw bottles at police, cones, rocks, you name it, and assault private property as well as members of the general public? Because they needed someone to demonize the rest of the good demonstrators. You see, the anarchists were actually given their own operations base, even during the curfew and civil emergency that was declared after their attacks. Boy, that was a good excuse to clear the streets.
If you thought the anarchists who commandeered a privately owned downtown building were out of town now, well, think again. As Cairo 7 Eyewitness News reporter Christina McKenna has found out, they're still here and still living rent-free.
Susan, when these anarchists moved out of the building behind me on Saturday, a lot of people thought they should have been headed to jail. Instead, it turns out a lot of them just headed around the corner, and they're now living in a building right over here where they're enjoying electricity, hot water, and heat, all rent-free.
Saturday afternoon was a celebration here. 7 days after they commandeered this downtown building, anarchists walked away without a word from police.
It feels to me like we won.
And at least some are still winning. As part of the deal to get them to surrender this building, anarchists were offered housing just around the corner at the same price. The building is owned by the Low Income Housing Institute, a private nonprofit that is in large part funded by the city and is now working with the city to house the anarchists.
First of all, the criminal trespassing, that was me or you or the average person out in the street, we'd be in jail.
John Satoli can't believe the anarchists aren't in jail now. As a lawful tenant in the building the anarchists had seized, he was locked out of his packaging and shipping business for a week during his busiest season. Satoli can't believe he's now contemplating bankruptcy, and the people who put them there have paid no consequence at all.
They walked away. They walked away, and the city of Seattle, low-income housing, moved them across the street on me and yours, taxpayers' dollars.
So why didn't the police department arrest the anarchists when they moved out of that building? Well, that's a question a lot of people are asking, especially since the West Precinct is just down the block. We asked the police department this weekend. We asked them again today. They still haven't returned our call with an answer.
Now, for the most part, these protests for Trayvon have been peaceful. So who knows if the powers that be are going to get their wish and inflame this racial tension in the country. But we do know that in Oakland, the freeways were blocked off, violence erupted there, and the police were just allowing the protesters to take over the city, scare drivers and innocent bystanders in L.A. as well. Who cares if anyone gets killed? Because Zimmerman is a whitey racist cracker, and we must divide and conquer. Now, do I personally think that Zimmerman was wrong to go after Trayvon Martin? Yes, I do. Now, are the lines a little bit blurry where the aggressor becomes the victim in an attack? I think we can all agree on that. But the point is, the justice system acquitted him. They found him not guilty. But still, the media and the protesters are focusing on race. But I feel like a lot of the protesters are failing to recognize the fact that the mainstream media and the Department of Justice are behind pushing all of this racial tension. In fact, a local Tampa news station reported in 2012 that George Zimmerman accused the Sanford Police Department of corruption more than a year before he shot Trayvon Martin, saying the agency covered up the beating of a black homeless man by the son of a white officer. During a 90-second statement to city commissioners at a community forum, Zimmerman said, "I would just like to state that the law is written in black and white. It should not and cannot be enforced in the gray for those who are in the thin blue line." Now, that story was never covered by the mainstream media, of course, because it didn't fit the agenda of divide and conquer. Now, coming up later in the show, David Knight is going to be speaking with Larry Pinkney to discuss how the government uses COINTELPRO to create racial division. Now, the cozy relationship between the establishment media and the CIA and FBI is nothing new. In fact, it's been around since the 1940s, used as a tool by the national security state. Take a look at this article written by Kurt Nimmo. It's up on Infowars.com. The CIA will now openly propagandize Americans. On July 2nd, a little-noticed reform passed in January went into effect. The Smith Month Modernization Act of 2012, passed as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, will allow the CIA to flood America with more government propaganda. The Smith Month Act passed as the national security state was taking shape in 1948. It authorized the State Department to unleash a tidal wave of propaganda outside the United States while supposedly forbidding its dissemination inside the country. The leading TV networks, including ABC and NBC, the wire services, AP, UPI, Reuters, along with the Hearst newspapers, Scripps Howard, Newsweek, the Miami Herald, and the Saturday Evening Post, all had dealings with the spy agency. But the CIA's most valuable associations were with the New York Times, CBS, and Time, Inc. Frank Church revealed in 1975 how the establishment media works hand in glove with the CIA.
I thought that it was a matter of real concern that planted stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here, because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now, we're looking at that very carefully.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks.
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
Well, it will be the 17th anniversary since TWA Flight 800 exploded, and a new documentary is set to be released on Wednesday to support the theory that the plane was hit by a missile. Well, in a convenient twist, previously confidential FBI documents have been unearthed and released to the media, tying Al-Qaeda to the TWA crash. The Daily Mail reports that the FBI had advance warning of an Al-Qaeda plot to bring down a commercial airliner on American soil just weeks before the 1996 TWA crash that claimed 230 civilian lives. A series of previously confidential FBI documents obtained by investigative journalist Peter Lance provide compelling evidence that the crash was an act of terror orchestrated by the man now believed by many to be the true architect of 9/11, Ramzi Youssef, who was one of the conspirators in the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Al-Qaeda never claimed responsibility for the aircraft crash. The official cause of the disaster remains an explosion of a fuel tank due to a short circuit aboard the plane. In a chilling twist, the source of the FBI intelligence was Gregory Scarpa Jr., the son of one of the mob's most prolific killers, who hoped that cooperating in the federal sting would lead to a lighter sentence for his own crimes. According to Lance, the FBI's initial attempts to dismiss Scarpa Jr.'s intelligence as a hoax was to cover up the unholy alliance between the FBI and the mob and protect a raft of mafia indictments that might otherwise have been thrown out of court. So it's just one conspiracy to cover up another conspiracy. The official story has always been that it was an explosion in the fuel tank, and now these new unearthed documents are saying that Al-Qaeda was involved. But either way you look at it, neither of these stories are focusing on the facts that a lot of people, witnesses, and National Guards said a missile struck the plane. Look over here, look over there. No, let's look at the facts. Victims' death certificates have not been finalized because the manner of death remains unknown. During the investigation, the FBI took over the case because a criminal act was suspected. Eyewitnesses reported seeing something go up quickly from the Earth's surface right before the explosion. Unexplained explosive residue was found throughout the wreckage. But the case is pending inactive rather than closed. And in addition to the hundreds of witnesses who reported seeing a streak of light in the air before the crash, there were two Air National Guard pilots in the air at the time who identified that streak as a missile. Now, here to talk with me about the curious release of these documents is documentary filmmaker Chris Emery. His team touched on the conspiracy surrounding TWA Flight 800 in his latest documentary, State of Mind, Psychology of Control, which is being sold exclusively in the InfoWars shop. All right, Chris, well, thank you so much for being here in the studio with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate that.
Well, you have a lot of information on the TWA Flight 800 because you actually worked on this story for a couple of years.
I did. This was before I dove into the Oklahoma City bombing case, and I was asked to step aside from the TWA case by an intermediary through the Employees Union based out of Lambert Field in St. Louis. I was getting too close to the truth. A close family, a member of mine that was working for the airline at the time, had their job threatened, and I had to make a decision. Luckily, there was a third party that I was able to pass my research information on to that ended up giving it to James Sanders and his wife. They did a marvelous job putting out two DVDs on the case. Great follow-through and a lineup and just a thorough review of what actually happened that evening of July 17, 1996.
And so what do you think about these, the new documents that are being unearthed just in time for the...
Well, it's, you know, it's typical, a stunt that the FBI pulls. And to put this in context for the viewers, after studying Oklahoma City, which occurred in 1995, April 1995, TWA comes along 15 months later in July of 1996. the way that the narrative was pushed for Oklahoma City was completely false, according to what the Justice Department offered. That worked so well for them that they decided to roll out the same bag of tricks for TWA 800. So what they're saying now is that Ramzi Youssef had something to do with it. Well, that's false, patently false, on his face. Evidence, damage, witnesses, everything. It's just complete bunk. There's another storyline going on that there was a Scarpa, former member of the Mafia, limited hangout member of the Mafia, and he was incarcerated in Florence, Colorado. He brings out the story of Ramzi Youssef and then embellishes it. Well, we know that whole story's false. So what we're dealing with, and the Justice Department has actually become very good at this, not saying it's good, but they're aces at this game of doing a shell game. They'll go ahead and present different storylines, completely ignoring what actually happened. So that's what we have here this morning.
Right, and at the time when this came up, the FBI actually said that those materials were a hoax and that, that there was no way Youssef was involved, but now exactly. They're kind of bringing it back around.
So it completely, torpedoes any credibility they have on their stories. Now, I do have to qualify that. In my research in the TWA 800 case, there were very good, very conscientious employees with the NTSB, with the FBI, with the U.S. Coast Guard, as well as a lot of search and rescue people, and the local and state law enforcement for both New Jersey and New York that knew what happened. They wanted the truth to come out. But, and there's a very good documentary that's coming out this Wednesday to commemorate the 17-year anniversary of the shootdown. The FBI pretty much enacted the equivalent of martial law on the dock. And all of the information and the evidence, everything was coming in from the bottom of Long Island Sound, was commandeered by the FBI. They only wanted one storyline to come through. Well, that's no way to conduct an investigation.
Exactly. And so and their official story didn't match eyewitnesses. It was too... Air National Guard pilots in the air at the time identified this streak in the sky as a missile.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And in my research, even as a filmmaker, you have to go back to the basic, break it down into the simplest of terms. You have your physical evidence, the debris field. There were actually two parts of that plane that landed on, two sections that landed on the ocean floor, even though they were blown, some of it wasn't even recognizable. The front of the plane was actually... fell down first, and then the back of the plane followed. What the FBI did is they mapped the debris field in reverse. Well, that shows that it was actually, if we were to follow their storyline, it would have been an incoming flight coming in from Charles de Gaulle versus an outgoing flight from JFK. Ludicrous. Right there, we knew that something was horribly wrong. General Parton, retired Air Force general, and if you want me to go into, we had a discussion on this previously, I was at his home the third week of October of 2003. We were talking about the Oklahoma City case, nothing to do with TWA at all. After a lengthy discussion, got to be about 4 a.m., I had to get up and get a flight early the next morning, or that morning, to go back to Oklahoma City. And I was at his home in Alexandria, Virginia. I got up from his dining room table. He looked at me point blank, plain as day, and said, "I designed the ordnance that took that plane down." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "TWA 800. So we sat down for another 4 hours, and he took me through all of the details, sketched out the debris field, what happened to the ordnance. And he said it was a special missile ordnance that they designed at the Pentagon Armament Lab. It was called a backstop missile system. If the first missile didn't take the target out, the second one would. And he showed me exactly what happened. He told me where the damage entered in to the fuselage, cut it in half like a meat cleaver. The entrance hole was about 4 to 5 feet in diameter. The exit hole was over 8 feet in diameter. There is no symmetry at all on that explosion. So if you want to believe the FBI story of Ramzi Youssef having an explosive ordnance under the seat, you're going to have symmetry. If you want to believe the center fuel tank explosion reason, you're going to have symmetry. There was no symmetry at all on the damage of that. And the cruel thing is that when they reconstructed this plane at the Kelberton hangar, and it was a... it was a closed National Guard hangar. The reconstruction of the plane clearly shows there was no symmetry on the explosion. So why they're rolling this whole story out is completely beyond me, and it's simply not true.
And the chief fire and explosives investigator on the Flight 800 said he was absolutely certain that a spark from damaged wiring triggered the explosion of overheated fuel vapors. But you have...
Well, there were two things on that that I learned early on. That was an incoming flight from Athens, Greece, the night before. and the servo pump actually emptied that tank to 10% of its capacity. Load displacement and fuel allocation and so forth, the TWA, I mean, you don't have to have a full plane of fuel to fly to Paris. So anyway, that particular center fuel tank that they claimed blew up simply was only about 10% full. Second thing was that the faulty wiring that the FBI had claimed that was used to cause that explosion was not in any Boeing aircraft since November of 1969. And I got that piece of information from a retired, he was a senior mechanic with TWA, worked out of their Kansas City service hangar. And he said that because of a another airline, that foreign airline, that Boeing had used that wiring in, they had a catastrophic accident with that. In September of 1969, it was November of 69, Boeing took all that wiring out, and the 747, fleet of 747s didn't hit the drawing boards at Boeing Field until 1972. Hmm. So we're talking about nearly 2.5 to 3 year complete, you know, time period where obviously they're not even going to bring in faulty wiring to put on a new aircraft. So why the FBI chose to pull that story is beyond me. And it's really unfortunate because there's a lot of good agents on there that wanted this truth to come out, and it was their testimony and their fact-finding efforts that were quashed on this whole thing.
Exactly, and it seems like the documentary that's coming out on Wednesday, it has those six investigators that were working that said that they were actually coerced or silenced by the FBI.
Sure.
And so now some people are using CNN. They aired a government-sponsored reenactment of the flight, and they said that maybe the witnesses saw the flash coming up because of the climb that the plane took.
No. There were, and according to General Parton, of course, there were actually two missiles that hit it. The first one came in actually on the right side of the plane. There was some speculation as far as it coming on the left side. Engine number three, if you count out 1, 2, 3, and 4 engine, it was following the heat trail on engine number three, and it cut the fuselage in half between rows 17 and 19. And that's when the front part of the plane. Now, what you're alluding to, referring to, is what the CIA came up with in their animation. Red flag. When the CIA shows up on an investigation, there's bound to be all kind of, you know, rabbit trails. They want, their job is to deflect you from what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And as an investigative journalist, you know as well as I, that you really gotta stay focused, keep your eye on the ball. The CIA doesn't want you to do that. The second missile came up, took down basically shoved the wheel housing from the first class cabin into the cockpit. The back of the plane climbed another 400 feet, then it hit the parabolic arch and started falling down. What the CIA claimed, it was went up another 4,200 feet. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
The thrust, the computers, everything on the engine simply, there's no way that the back of the plane would have climbed that high. But that was just their, you know, their diversion, their story. They wanted to get out there. It's not true.
Right, and then so the investigative journalist Lance that has put these, you know, brought these documents to light is saying that he's basically arguing that they're saying it was officially the wiring, and mm-hmm. he's saying no, it was actually this Ramzi Youssef. So they're sort of playing a shell game.
Exactly. You have, it just a simple, you know, math. You have three different shells. Well, they're actually diverting you to two. What's under the third shell? And that's what we're trying to focus on, and the truth. When you have a retired U.S. Air Force general that says he designed that ordnance at the Pentagon Armament Lab, they shared ordnance with the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force, a retired senior mechanic. You have a retired United Airlines pilot who was actually a very good friend of mine out in L.A. sued the NTSB, the CIA, the FAA, and the FBI in federal court in Los Angeles. One of them, he compelled them to bring forth the evidence, and they refused to do so. So, you know, you look at this whole thing, and it's like, okay, well, we know it was shot down. We know the families were lied to. We know there was a cover-up. Why not just step up and tell these families what happened? That's the least that they deserve, is the truth. And, you know, respect the families.
So you were talking to me earlier about that there was a base or something. There was some sort of a training exercise going on there, and that's the real...
Yeah, it was a top-secret exercise going on off the coast of Long Island that evening. And from the best that General Parton was able to speculate, and some of his colleagues that he went to school with, and, you know, he served in the Pentagon with, he had since retired, obviously, back in 1978, but he got calls within about 24 hours after the shootdown stating, yes, they knew what happened. And it was a live exercise, real-time exercise, both monitored at the Situation Room at the White House. And there was a special top-secret drone that was floating about They estimate between 62 and 68,000 feet above the earth, monitoring this whole exercise going on. TWA 800 breached the security perimeter, and it was unfortunate. I mean, just it was a blip on the radar. And the ship that was in charge of shooting down the drones that were launched from the submarines, that's the story that I got from General Parton, mistook the TWA 800 for one of the drones. Now, here's the thing that the FBI fails to mention is there were actually 25 vessels in that group, in that exercise, 23 surface vessels, two submarines. Every one of them, according to radar tracking from all the way from Maine down to Logan Field in Boston and JFK, all the way down to South Carolina, tracked these vessels leaving the scene of the accident. Well, why wouldn't they come back and help? And that's telltale right there. There's something horribly wrong. You have the U.S. Navy, some of the top, you know, experts in salvage and so forth. They had to wait 3 days to bring up a salvage trawler from South Carolina to bring that debris field, the debris up from the bottom of Long Island Sound. So that's another red flag.
So why do you think the truth hasn't come out about the training exercise?
That was a top secret exercise. I guess that's a question you're going to have to ask the Pentagon and the U.S. Navy. I don't know for sure. My speculation as a citizen, as an investigative journalist that stepped back and looked at this case, the government would have been sued for billions of dollars. I mean, it was a catastrophic accident. And, of course, the Atlanta Olympics were taking place during that time period, so it would have been a massive public relations disaster, too. So there was a lot of things running concurrently that it would have been more advantageous for the powers that be and the top decision makers just to sweep this under the rug, and that's exactly what they did. But we tie into the state of mind psychology of control in a movie that's coming out this Wednesday. And we address the different techniques that the government and the media use to do exactly what's happening today. This is a prime example of what's going on. Luckily, you and I and the staff here at InfoWars have the wherewithal and the ability to step back and say, okay, we can sort through the facts and the fiction. And that's what we're going to try to do with the movie. And we give you the basic, the building blocks and the tools to, first of all, put it all in context. Second, figure out who's doing it. And third of all, we give you the solutions to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Well, we have just started, actually. Anyone who orders State of Mind starting today, we have just started shipments on State of Mind. And then it's going to actually be premiering on the InfoWars Nightly News on Wednesday night. We'll also have the roundtable interview that you did with Alex.
There were actually myself and three other members of the crew.
Crew.
Richard Grove, James Lane, and Austin Green did a marvelous job in writing and directing the movie.
Wonderful. And that's going to be premiering on the 17th. You can go to the InfoWars store for State of Mind, the Psychology of Control. Well, thank you so much for being here in the studio. It was rather serendipitous that you were here to work on the shipments today so we could get you in to talk about this story. It all ties together.
Absolutely, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Leanne.
Thank you. All right, well, we're going to be taking a quick break, and then David Knight will be back with tonight's guest, Larry Pinkney.
Now you can watch the InfoWars Nightly News streaming live, as it happens, for free.
Check it out at InfoWars.com/show.
Are we choosing our own paths, our own destiny, or has it been pre-selected for us?
C.S. Lewis said, when training beats education, civilization dies.
We need to always be cognizant of, as a free society, that information can be used as a weapon.
Barrier to discovery is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge.
We are seen as nothing but biological androids.
To gain control of education in America, not for a philanthropic purpose, but to change the thinking of the American people.
From the time we're very young, we're taught to, you know, worship authority, basically, because that's our key to survival as young children.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control. From compulsory state education to the Hollywood media brainwashing machine, we are kept in perpetual bondage to the ideas that shape our actions.
And the CIA scientists could actually film people who had been surreptitiously dosed
with LSD.
There's a brain entrainment process that takes place.
That gives the government free rein to create whatever story or narrative it wants to create.
Whatever the public face of something is, whatever they're talking about publicly, there's something else over here they're probably not looking at.
How to engineer the opinion of the American people so that they would fully endorse, not only endorse, but demand a war.
When you watch mainline establishment television, you are putting yourself in front of the barrel of a gun.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control, psychological warfare, brainwashing. Are we controlled and manipulated? You bet.
That's mind control par excellence.
Find out how deep the rabbit hole really goes with this new groundbreaking documentary film, State of Mind. Available exclusively at InfoWars.com.
Because there's a war on for your mind. That has been our motto here at InfoWars for my 18 years of battle against the globalist. And now we see the open announcements of global, private, corporate tyranny over our governments. That's what the New World Order is. It's an unaccountable private combine of organized crime engaged in corporate takeovers of nation states and the conscious attempt to abolish basic rights and fundamental liberties. InfoWars.com is not just leading the charge against this here in the U.S. or North America. We are leading the charge worldwide. And that's because our listeners, our viewers, our supporters, fellow freedom lovers like you across the planet resonate with our message of liberty and telling it like it is. And that's why for the last 2 years especially, I have thrown everything I've got, my time, my energy, our backup capital, everything into really trying to awaken the sleeping giant that is humanity. And that's why the July issue that just came in a few days ago is so important. We've already sold about half the stock we have of it at cost in groups of 10 up to 100 in bulk. It covers the entire NSA spy grid, how it ties in worldwide, how it's not about stopping terrorists, but about suppressing and dominating and controlling the free press and political opposition. And in this magazine, we don't just have three free bumper stickers like I did a few months ago. We have 10 bumper stickers, four full-size ones with amazing messages guaranteed to get people thinking like America has been occupied by globalist forces. InfoWars.com. Listen to Alex Jones at InfoWars.com. InfoWars.com. Forbidden information. Listen to Alex Jones. InfoWars.com. And then on top of it, six medium-sized bumper stickers with the message as well. These are key to post in legal and lawful areas on your book bag, your computer, your car, or to give friends and family. I have printed 500,000 of these bumper stickers. Only half of this month's run of magazines has them. So when you purchase them in bulk or you're a 12-month subscriber, you will get the special issue. And I can't afford to do this every month, so it's going to be quite a while until we do this again. Please take advantage of this. Buy them in bulk and give them to your friends and family and encourage them to get these bumper stickers out, because with 500,000 stickers, we can reach tens of millions of people with the message of truth. They want to collectivize us. They want to bankrupt us. They want to drive us into their arms to control us. They want to dumb us down. But the sleeping giant that is free humanity is awakening. So I want to thank you all for your support. I want to encourage everybody to go to InfoWarsStore.com and to get a 12-month subscription or to give a gift subscription. Imagine 12 of these coming to your friends or family's door to wake them up. Or to give a gift subscription to the local police department or your local congressman or woman. This is how we're going to affect change, voting with our dollars and voting with our time. Again, visit InfoWarsStore.com today to subscribe, to get the magazine in bulk, or to give a gift subscription, or to give yourself a subscription to wake up friends and family. I am all in. I am committed 110% to not mince words and to not back off and to boldly confront the globalist. So I want to thank all of you that have supported us in the past, and I want to encourage all of you out there who may be on the fence that know this information is true but have been scared to take action. You had better be scared of not taking action and letting this monstrous system come to fruition. Now is the time to commit. Now is the time to say which side of history you're on. Now is the time to stand against the globalist and the New World Order. And regardless of whether you get this July issue, this July 4th resistance to tyrants issue, spread the word about liberty, resist corruption in your area. Millions of us doing little things can move mountains together. I'm Alex Jones, signing off for InfoWars.com and the InfoWars team.
Well, we're pleased to have as our guest today Larry Pinkney. Now, as you've seen Larry Pinkney probably many times on InfoWars, you know that he's had a lot of experience with racial division, how the government uses that in COINTELPRO, as well as he's got experience with guns and self-defense. And so we want to talk to Larry and get his opinion on what's going on with the Trayvon Martin case. Welcome, Larry. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure. I really mean that, as you well know. I'm really glad to be here. So let's rock and roll. Where do we go?
Well, you were on the show Friday before the verdict came out with the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin trial. And then the verdict was released on Saturday, finding Zimmerman not guilty. And since then, we've had some riots in various places. I guess the biggest incident that I know of is in L.A., where they were blocking the traffic on the interstate, and the police basically stood down as stop traffic. So what's your take on all of this and on people's reaction to it?
I think, first of all, I want to give a lot of praise to the overwhelming majority of black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, everyday ordinary people. I want to praise all of them, so many, I should say, of them, for not succumbing to the trap that I really believe was being laid by the lamestream, corporate stream, media, and the corporate-owned government. Because what they wanted to see was they wanted to see people out there just without thinking, just doing and saying, but mostly doing things without thinking. They wanted to see hysteria. They wanted to see division. And overall, I have to give my congratulations and my praise to everyday people, because overall, they fail in doing that, with the exception of some places, like you just mentioned, L.A.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I look at this, and I was thinking about possible reactions, thinking back to the L.A. riots in the wake of the Rodney King beating and trial and that sort of thing. And, you know, it was so strange, because my reaction to that, when I saw that, I was absolutely outraged at the police brutality. Absolutely outraged. But I was outraged at the police. I didn't understand why they would just pull people, you know, just the general public out of their cars and start beating them. You know, and it's interestingly enough, the police withdrew in that case as well and circled the wagons. You know, that was, you know, Gates was the first one, the police chief there, to have SWAT teams and to militarize the police. And they took all of that firepower and basically circled the wagons around their own police departments. I guess they were expecting to get attacked, but instead of them getting attacked, they were attacking just general people off the streets, even Korean grocers, you know, who didn't have anything, any dog in that fight. So that, I guess that's my concern, is that the government is always trying to set up this black-white division, when really what we're seeing here is a blue versus the public. You know, it's the police and the brutality. Why aren't they concerned about that?
Because it serves their purpose not to be concerned about that. You know, it's always important to, in terms of manipulating people, the way they manipulate us is to inflame our passions, not our mind, but our passion.
Yes.
So we don't think. And, you know, our emotions, as it were. And as I said earlier, I think that overwhelmingly, the people, the everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people have shown not only a great deal of restraint, but a great deal of wisdom. So that tells me that people are waking up. They didn't go for the ghost in the massive way that the corporate stream media and no doubt the government, Barack Obama, drone man, pillless man, and his minions would have liked to have seen.
Right, absolutely. You know, one of the things that Alex was talking about on the radio, Alex Jones was talking about the statistics going back to the 70s, talking about how much, how this is really not, they're trying to make a big deal out of a white on black issue here.
And yet there's been a lot of black-on-black crime, that 94% of the people in the large number of blacks have been shot in the last 30 to 40 years. 94% of that was black shooting black. But, you know, interestingly enough, the other part of the statistic is that as a district attorney in Chicago, where there is a lot of that type of crime going on, pointed out that 80% of the deaths there were due to drug prohibition. So if we take a look at this war on drugs, you could say that 75% of the black people who have been shot were shot by other black people because of this prohibition that's going on, this prohibition that works in the interest. Why don't the people take to the streets and talk about that? Why don't they protest the war on drugs? Because we've got more people in prison than China or Russia or anybody has ever had. And the majority of those people in prison are black people. Why aren't they upset about that? I mean, that's what you want to see, racism. Take a look at the war on drugs. Look at what Nixon and Reagan did with the war on drugs. Why don't they protest that? Why don't they stop that?
Because if they were to do that, if they were to... I'm sorry, this is not funny, but I have to have a sense of humor. Because if they were to do that, then that would mean that people were actually beginning to pay attention to who the real enemy is.
Exactly. Okay? Exactly.
And obviously, they do not want folks, I don't care what their color, they don't want folks to pay attention to the national and global power elite, the corporate media, corporate stream media, the corporations, the corporate government, because, oh my God, then we'll come together, unite around our common interests. So, yes. When I think about the horrors that go on in poor communities across the board, not just black communities, but poor communities, economically poor, I'm talking. Mm-hmm. But in black communities where, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, David, I think it was two or three years ago, I came across this poster, and the poster said that, blacks kill more blacks than the KKK, all right? And then it was signed, good job, keep it up, KKK.
Yeah, right.
Now, you know, now I'm saying, wait a minute. Now, people wanted to get offended about the KKK part. Okay, but let's also look at the situation. I understand that economic, educational, social, cultural deprivation, all those things are real. However, that is not a good enough argument to simply ignore the terrible pain that and deaths and murders and violence, quote unquote, that's going on in black communities and other poor communities. So my emphasis is, see, I don't my horse in the race, if you will, to use your expression, David. My horse is the people. I think we need to really understand that this is about the people coming together. And they're going to do everything they can, you know, with Trayvon Martin. And I feel great sorrow and pain, of course, for any life that's lost, including, of course, this young man, Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, I also feel great sorrow for the other lives that are being lost every single day across this country, but you don't hear anything about. Now, why is that? We don't hear anything about that. You know,
well, you never hear the national mainstream media talk about the deaths due to police brutality, due to beatings, due to shootings, people dying from being tasered, people getting crippled from being tasered. That's going on all the time. And it's going on to black and to white. And yet there is no outrage about that. I mean, yes, this is one person's death, but look at how many of these other cases there are. Nobody is talking about that.
Right. And as you said, David, it crosses the board. Mm-hmm. This is happening to people of all colors, especially black, white, and brown people, but it includes, you know, red and yellow people too.
That's
okay,
right.
But if we recognize that, if we realize that, if the people become conscious of that, once again, they're going to stop. They're going to critically think. We don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what's going on. So we have got to be. When I say we, I mean we, the people. We've got to be the ones to determine the narrative. We've got to be the one to determine the narrative, not the corporate media, not the government, you know, not these hate mongers out there who want to see division. They want to see blood in the streets, when in fact it should be unity in the streets. I want to praise those few people too that who were outraged, but who did not allow themselves to be pumped out, to be played and pushed into reacting in such a way so that they could call out the SWAT team, so that they could do what they really, what we know they really want to do.
Right.
But back to,
right.
You know, back to what you had said, and I apologize for digressing, but the fact is that we, that's to say everyday ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, everyday ordinary folks need to pursue our interests, our common interests collectively, together.
That's right.
You know, and that's when I am determined to keep pushing that message. Determined, you know, so mm-hmm. I hope I'm making some semblance of sense here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, going back to the war on drugs, I mean, when this really mm-hmm. started ramping up under Reagan, I became aware of these asset forfeiture laws, how they were charging inanimate objects with crimes, and the way they were doing these no-knock raids, which now have become just ordinary, everyday things. They're not even an aberration anymore. And
right.
they report them, and a local news might report them once, and then that's it. Everybody forgets about it. We try mm-hmm. to pull these things up and report on them on a national basis, but it's become so commonplace, nobody's even thinking about what's essentially martial law anymore. That they just mm-hmm. feel like they're going to kick the door down, use stun grenades and throw grenades in and bark orders at people. If you don't do exactly what they want, they shoot you. If you think you've got an intruder, they shoot you. This is people of all races now are being affected
right.
by this. And it was affecting everybody's, they were using the war on drugs to destroy our constitutionally recognized, God-given civil liberties. And mm-hmm. a lot of people who weren't a part of either selling drugs or using drugs, just said, well, I don't really care. That doesn't really affect me. They didn't realize that it affected them. Now we're seeing the same thing being put on steroids with the war on terror. Because now
exactly.
they're really ramping up the militarization of the police. They're really going around and doing this. People need to wake up about this. But let's talk about how they're using and controlling this narrative with the media as well as the government. I mean, it started right away with NBC editing the 9/11 tape to try to make it look like it's more racially motivated than I believe it really was. And that was really the seminal event. And it looks like the defense attorneys now are going to take action against NBC, civil action against that, because that was really the thing that kick-started it, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And this is what the corporate stream media does anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all they want to do is to, one, they want to make money. So they can get people to pay attention to their machinations, if you will, their shenanigans, okay, rather than reporting, seriously reporting the fact that we have no privacy in this country. They wouldn't dare go into that. They
right.
want to talk to us about, you know, where is Edward Snowden instead of what the information is that Edward Snowden put out. They
yes.
don't want to deal with that.
Exactly.
Okay? And it's the same thing here. You know, they always, I say they, I'm talking about this blasted corporate stream media, which is really nothing more than a propaganda arm for the corporate-controlled, corporate-owned government. So, you know, the war, so-called war on terror, is actually a war of terror
Absolutely.
Against everyday people. It's not a war, you know, against terror. It's a war of terror, and that war of terror is being waged in so many different ways on so many different levels, both physically and psychologically. It mm-hmm. is being waged against us,
yes.
we the people.
Yes. They're terrorizing the public, hoping that the public will think that they can be secure by giving up their liberties, but the opposite of liberty is not security, it's slavery. They're
right.
trying to enslave us, and they're using a tactic of terrorism against us to do that. Now, talking about the way they manipulate the media, I mean, the first thing they did was NBC goes in and edits this tape, and the police at the scene had seen that his head was beaten, and they believed that it was a self-defense thing. The police chief didn't believe that there was a case there. But they spun that to try to make it racially motivated, and they actually sent down, and this is interesting because this was found by Judicial Watch. They filed a Freedom of Information Act in April and of 2012, and they got this information back that the Department of Justice actually sent down a group called a Community Relations Service, and it says that they deployed them in the memos, and they paid them to do one event after the other. They've got events like on a timeline here, March 25th through 27th. They go down, they're deployed, quote-unquote, to Sanford, Florida, to work marches, demonstrations, and rallies related to the shooting and death. Then a couple of days later, give them like another $1,000 to provide support for protest deployment in Florida. Then they give them another $750 to provide technical assistance to the city of Sanford and law enforcement agencies for the march and rally. So they're going through, there's this long timeline where the Department of Justice, the Federal Department of Justice, is actually sending down an organization and funding it to basically create civil distrust is mm-hmm. what they're doing at that point. And then mm-hmm. later on, yeah, I mean, it's, you've seen this type of thing when you were with the original Black Panthers, right?
Over and over again. Mm-hmm. Look, all they've done today, and I say today in the year 2013, in this 21st century, all they've done is ratcheted it up. They've tweaked it, okay? Mm-hmm. And they've begun to, I mean, let me just deal with this head on, if I may. Let's assume, now I don't know this, none of us really know, but let's assume that the matter was indeed a quote-unquote racial matter. Okay, mm-hmm. let's assume that. So if it was indeed, why is it that the corporate stream media is in fact heightening this to a point of hysteria instead of saying, hey, this is a grand opportunity, even out of tragedy, even out of sadness, this is a grand opportunity for us to come together to discuss our concerns, to deal with this, instead of, you know, ratcheting up the hysteria.
Right.
Even if it were, I don't know that it was, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but even if it were a racial quote-unquote matter, all of us, whether we like it or not, belong to one race, and that race is called human, H-U-M-A-N.
That's right.
And we've got to start thinking and acting in those terms with that mindset.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like they pick a skin color. You know, why mm-hmm. they pick hair color and you know, pit the redheads against the blondes or something. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But you had experience with this, with the Black Panthers. It spread out beyond just being a black group, right? You got people from all different ethnic backgrounds or cultures sure. involved in that, didn't you?
Right. And what we learned, and I might say the hard way, because in those years, in the 60s and 70s, we had no idea of how vicious, how insidious, we had no that this government is. Mm-hmm. And it's far worse today.
Oh, yeah.
Bad enough then. Okay. But it was all about even then using agent provocateurs, divide and conquer, discrediting people with false information, all of which they still do today, but on a much, much larger scale. Mm-hmm. The Black Panther Party that was formed in October of 1966, the original Black Panther Party, was ultimately physically decimated, destroyed, not our legacy, but physically the party was destroyed as a result of COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, and these tactics. But it wasn't just us. It happened to white political activists.
Yeah.
It happened to American Indian, that's the American Indian movement, Native, Indigenous people, political activists. Mm-hmm. It happened to Chicano, Chicana, you know, La Raza Unida, the Brown Berets, the Young Lords, the Puerto Ricans. I mean, it happened across the board.
Right.
And I go back to my original point. So what they're doing, by they, I mean the corporate government, they continue to use the same old tactics. Why? Because they work. But
yes.
I will say this, the more of us that become conscious, David, the more of us that become conscious, the less those tactics will work.
Well, you know, that's exactly what they're doing. You're talking about how they send down agent provocateurs. They use it to divide and conquer. And that's exactly what the Department of Justice did with this community relations service organization that they deployed down to Sanford. You know, they got the police chief temporarily fired. He was eventually reinstated. They got the prosecution going. And then look at what they did in the prosecution. We just learned right after they did the verdict of not guilty, they fired the IT manager from the Attorney General's office because he had gone public with the fact that they were manipulating evidence there. They had images that would have been in the favor of the Defense Department because, you know, they're showing Trayvon, all the pictures that they show of Trayvon is when he's about 12 years old or whatever. They want to make him look as innocent and non-threatening as possible. So there were pictures of him with guns and stuff like that, you know, looking like a tough guy, which would have helped the defense, but they withheld that evidence. Now, what happened was this IT manager, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It's Ben Kruidboss, I think is the way you pronounce his name. He's director of IT. He happened to notice that although they had sent 2,958 photos, there were actually 4,275. So they had withheld thousands of photos that might have been incriminating, might have been helpful for the defense. Now, that's a criminal action on the part of the prosecutor to withhold that.
In and of itself. That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
In and of itself. Now, that's a criminal action.
Now, listen to what happened, Larry. Okay, so the attorney generals, after they, first of all, they suspended him May 18th, and they fired him on Saturday. And what they did was they accused him of erasing the data to try to cover it for themselves and said, that's why we're firing him, because he erased the data. However, what we find is that the defense team said that they noticed that some of the pictures that they got were cell phone pictures that were black and white. And they said, wait a minute, cell phones don't take black and white pictures. And so they knew that something was being doctored because why would they be black and white? Well, because they didn't want to show any blood on Zimmerman's head. So they filed some requests for the original pictures, and they said it took them from the end of January until June 4th to get very poor pastel-colored pictures, not still the full-color pictures. So obviously this is being manipulated and being controlled by the Attorney General's office, being manipulated and controlled by the federal government, being manipulated and controlled by the media, so that, as you said, just as they did with the original Black Panthers, and that's when the Black Panthers got dangerous, was when they branched out from just being about the black community to where they started pulling in people from all different communities. That's when they got dangerous. That's when they set them up with this COINTELPRO, sending in false information, divide and conquer, and these COINTELPRO agents. And that's what we see going on here, even in this Zimmerman case. People need to understand how they're being played, because the government, as you said, still using the same playbook, but they've gotten a lot more sophisticated at it.
They are. You know, I was reading a statement that is purported to have been made by Ben Jealous, the head of the NAACP. I call it the National Association for Corporate, anyway, the NAACP. All right. And Jealous said, now this man should know better, but he said, quote, that Zimmerman had been found innocent. Zimmerman was not found innocent.
That's right.
All right? George Zimmerman was found not guilty.
Yes.
It's a big difference.
Yes.
Okay?
Right.
But the media is not making that distinction. Mm-hmm. And in our system of law, in the U.S., I won't say our anymore, it's really theirs, but in the U.S. system of jurisprudence, or so-called the justice system, I call it the just us injustice system, just us everyday folk injustice, but in this system, it's an adversarial system.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not a system about bringing about truth. It has nothing to do with truth. It has nothing to do with justice. I don't care what your color is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's nothing to do with that. But, you know, by planting these seeds, by the corporate stream media not making these important distinctions, and by the government engaging in these kinds of nefarious activities to corrupt the evidence, and I don't care whether the evidence is for the defense or whether it's for the prosecution. Remember, this is an adversarial system. That's what this quote-unquote system of jurisprudence is about. So if it's that, it has little to do with really attaining justice. Now, what you just mentioned, David, with respect to the government engaging in making sure in this specific case that photos were not received. Look, that's what they did time and time and time and time again. That's why we have so many political prisoners in the U.S. Yes,
oh, yeah.
I said political prisoners.
Absolutely.
Because it was fabricated. You can fabricate evidence by withholding evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you withhold certain evidence, what you're doing is you're making sure that either the defense or the prosecution is unable to present a strong case.
Well, look at when you sign in as a witness. They ask that you have to swear that you're going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, right? So what mm-hmm. they're doing, when they're withholding evidence, you're not getting the whole truth.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. And it's not about truth.
Right.
It's not about justice. And this I want to say to the listening audience, all my brothers and sisters, all my sisters and brothers, all colors, don't go for the ghost. Don't get sucked into this toilet of believing this hysteria and this nonsense because we're being manipulated. Don't be manipulated. Kudos to you who have not been manipulated. Reach out to your other sisters and brothers and sisters, and tell them to use their minds, as the Chicanos would say. Use your cabeza. Use your head.
That's right.
And don't be misled.
You know, in this case, this is a good example of the importance of a jury trial. Because in most cases, the prosecution comes up with a lot of trumped up charges just to hope that you'll plea bargain down to what they want to convict you for in the first place anyway.
Right.
Now, here you've got a situation where even though the judge appeared to be trying to skew things as well, you've got the jury actually finding him, as you pointed out, not innocent, but not guilty. Because mm-hmm. in our system, you have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt what you're trying to charge them with. And what they're saying is the government didn't prove that. Yeah,
exactly.
It's very difficult. And taking the specifics of the case, for example, I mean, even if there is a racial component in why he was following Trayvon around, it's almost like when you've got a situation with a husband and wife, and the wife is being passive-aggressive and nagging and taunting the husband, and finally he loses it and gets violent and starts attacking her. If she's in danger of her life, she is entitled to use deadly force to stop that attack. And so if you got a situation here where whatever led up to it, at that point, it's kind of like somebody breaks into your house and they start to, you know, you might fire a warning shot or whatever, they turn and run. If they're on your front yard running away from you and you shoot them in the back, you've used unwarranted force. Well, you also have a right to defend yourself if they're coming at you for whatever reason. And so that's really kind of the difficult thing that the jury had to decide, was what was going on at that moment. And I think based on the physical evidence that the police saw at the scene, I think that's why they originally didn't charge him that way and felt that there really wasn't a case, because there was a lot of evidence that it was a pretty brutal, violent fight. And talking about that, we had a caller who called in to Alex Jones on the radio show on Friday, and one of the things he was saying was open carry. You know, in Florida, they're not allowed to have open carry. In Florida, you can only legally open carry a loaded firearm while engaged in or going to and from fishing, hunting, and camping. Now, this law is currently being challenged in the court there in Florida. But mm-hmm. what do you think? I mean, you know, the Black Panthers openly carried weapons. What do you think about open carry versus concealed carry? I mean, it seems to me like open carry is a deterrent, actually, to violence.
Well, quite frankly, I'd rather know what I'm dealing with than not know.
Exactly,
okay?
Exactly.
It seems to me that that's common sense. If somebody's carrying a .357 Magnum or a .32 or a .38 and I don't know it, I mm-hmm. might accidentally step on their foot and get blown away.
That's right. Right. That's right.
And so I think it's just a matter of common sense. I think it goes the heart. Let's go through the heart of this matter. The government, and in this case, Department of Homeland Security, as well as the Attorney General's office, as well as right down from drone man Barack Obama, right on down from the White House, the government is doing everything it can to not only disarm people physically, but first they want to disarm us mentally, psychologically, so that we go for the okey-doke, okay?
Right.
I believe that we have a constitution, albeit that drone man and his Democratic and Republican Party minions have done everything they can to gut it, albeit, notwithstanding that fact, we supposedly have a Constitution, we have a First Amendment, we have a Fourth Amendment, and supposedly, you know, if we're supposed to be able to exercise the rights that are enshrined in that, clearly the propaganda that's being used to keep people in fear and keep people in a state of hysteria is being used not for our benefit, meaning everyday ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, but it's being used for the benefit of those who want to control and manipulate us. Same old thing, only they've ratcheted it up. And we have to bear that in mind. So I go right to the heart of the matter. They want to disarm everyday people in every sense of the word, not just with the right self-defense, but in every sense.
And if we look at the open carry versus concealed carry, I mean, you look at a situation where, as you said, you want to know what somebody is carrying. If you see a guy over there and he's got a gun strapped on his hip or across his shoulder, as Robert Heinlein said in his science fiction novel, he said, an armed society is a polite society. You know, like you said, you don't want to step on his toe. So in that situation, open carry can actually be a deterrence to violence. But when the government comes in, as they do here, we've got some very liberal gun control laws here in Texas. And by liberal, I mean in the original sense of the word, free, in the good sense, right?
I know.
So we have pretty liberal laws in Texas, and yet they don't allow open carry. They make you, and this is the problem, you go to concealed carry, now you've got to get registered with the government for concealed carry. Now, the original reason why you would have to get registered with the government for concealed carry was back in the day, people realized that, hey, if you're hiding a gun, maybe you've got something else to hide. So we want to know a little bit more about you, right? Otherwise, you're free to carry openly. That's the way it used to be all over the United States. But they use this concealed carry because why? It sets up legal entrapments for the people who, first of all, it registers the person who's carrying concealed. Then it sets up all kinds of legal entrapments for them. And then it also fails to provide the kind of deterrence within society that a firearm really should be to violence. You know, it really should be a deterrent to violence. So, it seems to me like that's another example. And we're seeing this now with Obama using this case to attack the Second Amendment.
Right? Even as he attacks and blows people away in Libya, North Africa, Somalia, East Africa, Afghanistan, Yemen, Bahrain, on and on. I mean, I'm just really trying to show up the hypocrisy of it all.
Okay? Every day people are being killed. I think it was a half dozen or more people killed in Pakistan today from an Obama drone strike. And they trumpet that as if that's a great deal.
Right. Then they turn around, David, at the same time and say, I just really don't understand why our society is so violent.
Absolutely.
They get violent. They're the ones. All they're doing is they're pushing it. They're this whole macho man, get off my planet by sundown mentality. And then they turn around and act like they don't understand why people do what they do, when in fact they're programming people to do those things and then trying to use those actions as a way to disarm the people.
Absolutely. Well, Larry, wrap it up for us and tell us what you would like the general public to make out of this. And again, restate what we're talking about earlier, I guess. People to look beyond what the media is feeding them, how the government is trying to manipulate them.
Well, I want to say first and foremost again to you, David, to InfoWars, to the entire, all the hardworking sisters and brothers there. I want to say thank you very, very much. From Alex on down or on up, however you want to say it. Now, to answer your question, I think that it's important for all of us to regain our sanity. In order to regain our humanity, we have to first regain our sanity. And what do I mean? What I mean is don't react. If we're going to do something, there's a big difference between responding and reacting. Do not react, okay? Mm-hmm. And my sisters and brothers, my brothers and sisters, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, don't react. Think. Critically think. Use your mind, okay? And I have great faith. With ups and downs, notwithstanding ups and downs and all the challenges we face, I still have great faith in the ability of humans to evolve, to grow. We have got to push aside this corporate stream media nonsense. We have to be, as you all are doing right there at InfoWars, we have to be our own media. Our own media. Okay? And as I, in my columns in BlackCommentator.com and IntrepidReport.com, I always end the column by saying, each one, teach one. Come within my sisters and brothers. That's what we have to do. It's a struggle. It's hard. They're going to do everything they can to discredit us, to knock us down. But as Frank Sinatra would say, I get right back up. You know, remember that rubber tree ant? Okay, I'm going to get right back up. So, I want to send out my love and my strength to all my sisters and brothers and sisters of all colors, of all ethnicities. And I want to say all power to the people, just as we said back in the day.
Great. Thank you so much, Larry. I appreciate you giving us that. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, as Larry was saying, each one reach one, each one teach one. And that's exactly what you can do at PrisonPlanet.tv. Get a subscription there. You can reach out and teach other people. 10 people can share that subscription with you and see the news as we're putting it out there. A different kind of news. A news that's not controlled by a centrally programmed government or media. As well as understand how they are trying to control your mind. And this week we have State of Mind is being released. It's still pre-bookable from InfoWarsStore.com. And this documentary here will help you and others understand exactly how the government is trying to control you, the techniques they use, and it's much broader than even just COINTELPRO. It's much broader than MKUltra. It extends fundamentally to the media as well as the educational system. So take a look at that. Get State of Mind. It'll be a real eye-opener for you and for your friends. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.